I want to welcome to the show Tom Appel. He's our good buddy. He's the publisher of the Consumer Guide Automotive. You can check him out at consumerguide.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. car_guy_Tom. Any and all automotive-related questions, 312-981-7200. And we welcome Tom to the show. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. It's funny because I noticed that you posted on my Facebook page. I was talking to Dan about this on the way in, and I was planning on mentioning it to you anyway. But I was watching Colbert last night before we left for work, and during the commercial break, they showed a local commercial for Evanston Subaru in Skokie. And I was like, make up your mind. But then you posted, what was the one that you posted on my Facebook page?
Arlington Acura in Palatine.
So this has got to be what, I mean, so they just need more room or something? They move on, but the name is already a brand, so they keep it?
I think that's what's going on, and I think these are all Roorman dealers.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's what's going on. And I think Bob Roorman thinks that, for example, Arlington Heights sounds classier than Palatine. As a Palatine resident, I'm not inclined to challenge that.
Yeah, I don't know. I watched the commercial and I was like, wait a minute, Evanston Subaru in Skokie? It's like, wait a minute. I know that they're Skokie and Evanston are close,
Yeah, neighbors.
They're neighbors, but you're not. I don't know. Does the actual lot cross the boundary between Skokie and Evanston? It was just very weird. Are there any other ones that pop into your head?
Well, Arlington Acura also includes Arlington Lexus and Palatine.
Oh, okay.
It's the same dealership. So.
I love the commercials because I live about almost a mile away from I can't even remember the name of the dealership, and Mike Anderson Chevrolet, okay, and their advertisement just cracks me up all the time, and I live right on Irving Park. I live right on Irving Park Road, and so every time they show a commercial for Mike Anderson, I think it's Mike Anderson Chevrolet. They say Mike Anderson Chevrolet on beautiful Irving Park Road. And then I look out my window and I go, it's not that beautiful, really. So, man. How you been?
Well, Cadillac Forever was a beautiful place in the country.
Oh, yeah.
I have been to Libertyville, and it's not really the country anymore.
No, it's not. I've been to Libertyville. I dated a girl who lived in Libertyville. So, yeah, I was in Libertyville many times. I also like that, this, of course, got me to thinking about, we lost a couple of weeks ago. Last week we lost Professor Irwin Corey, Tom.
Yeah.
And if you remember, he did some local commercials here for, I can't remember the name of the dealership in Evanston. I don't know if you remember the commercial, Tom.
Yes.
It's Professor Irwin Corey, and he's going, you can get Fuds in Evanston. You can get Subarus in Evanston. You can get Cadillacs in Evanston. Where's Evanston? Pulls out a map right here in Texas, and that's how the commercial ended. It was one of the best local commercials ever, right here in Texas, and that was what, that reminded me of this Evanston dealership that's somehow in Skokie.
it's the charms of Evanston.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
The selling point.
That's exactly right. Okay, Tom, hang on. When we come back, we got to do a recap of the Big Auto Show.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Hang on a second. Tom Appel joins us once a month to answer any and all of your car and automotive-related questions. He writes for Consumer Guide Automotive, and you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. 312-981-7200 for talk and text and your questions. Yeah. Good morning. Hi, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and the great, the one, the only, my buddy and yours, Steve Cochran, with your morning drive. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And Tom Appel is with us for his monthly visit. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And he is here to answer any and all of your automotive questions. So get him in there now. Call or text 312-981-7200. Tom will be able to answer any of those questions for you. And let's welcome Tom back to the show. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
So the Chicago Auto Show has just closed up. Overall, how was it?
My feet are sore. It was a good show. And as always, it takes up an enormous amount of space at McCormick Place, but that's such a great venue because everything's on one level. But yeah, fantastic show. Lots to see. A couple of interesting reveals. And just basically another good solid Chicago Auto Show that looked like it was very well attended the couple days I was there.
Okay. And what were some of the reveals that that are most interesting to you?
My favorite and probably the least necessary thing for America is a new SRT version of the Dodge Durango. The Durango is Dodge's large crossover SUV, which they've now stuffed full of 475 horsepower Hemi engine, lowered it slightly, black wheels. It is fantastic looking. It's the family three-row crossover that do 0 to 60 in 4.4 seconds.
Wow.
Utterly unnecessary and totally awesome.
Yeah, I was going to say, in case you got to get your family out of town quick.
Exactly.
So that's pretty cool. What else did you enjoy?
The big news is there's a brand new Ford Expedition. That's their very big SUV. It's kind of interesting that the Expedition, which is a vehicle you associate with old school Americana, at least in the automotive industry, no longer available with a V8. It's just an EcoBoost 3.5-liter V6. And this is kind of exciting and totally geek. Ford's first 10-speed automatic transmission will be in this, too. So if you're still remembering 3-speed automatics from the 70s, excuse me, now there's 10 speeds out there.
Wow. Wow. And so how much of this, in terms of how big is the auto show in Chicago? Is it the biggest one or is it the one in Detroit the biggest?
By far, Chicago is the biggest in terms of just space. Mm. And I think this year was 1,250,000 square feet.
Oh, my God. No wonder your feet are sore.
Yeah, it's a lot of ground to cover.
Man, oh, man. What are some of the other things that you saw that were unusual or cool?
Some interesting stuff in terms of trying to keep product lines fresh. So Chevy introduced what they called their a series of special editions that involved silver paint and red trimmed wheels. Nissan launched, and they were cool to look at, their Midnight Edition cars, which interestingly weren't black, they were silver. With black wheels, but there's a lot of that. A lot of sort of trim level stuff, special edition stuff. Nissan did launch a King Cab version of its Titan. For people who don't know, Nissan is getting back into the pickup truck business with a vengeance. It had launched its Titan pickup earlier last decade, and that was kind of a flop. So they've redesigned that, and that's back now, and they're a little bit more serious about it this time.
What about, was there a big showing for electric or hybrid cars, things like that?
Not so much. The big electric car news at the Chicago Auto Show was the Bolt, with a B, the Chevy Bolt. You could come, you could see that. Obviously, pricing is out. We all know that you can get it for under 30 grand if you qualify for the tax credit, and it goes 240 miles on a charge. So that's a really big deal, and there is a lot of public interest in that. I'm kind of crossing my fingers that this sells well and that technology continues to be developed.
Okay. And overall, a good show? Is it one of the better ones of the past few years, maybe?
Yeah, it was a very good mainstream show. There wasn't a lot of news in any one direction. It seemed like a lot of people were going there, and really good-looking displays.
And one of the interesting stories that came out of the Tribune about the auto show, or tying into the auto show, is this article about the best driving position when you have like over a dozen seat settings. It's getting really confusing now, Tom.
Well, what's happening is, and it's interesting that people go with power seats, because there's two schools of thought on this. One is, if you drive a car primarily yourself, you know, share it with a spouse or with children or something like that, how badly do you want power seats? Because you're going to adjust it once.
Right.
But
right.
If you do go on long trips and your needs change while you're driving, when you get to luxury vehicles, there are cars with 12, 15, 18-way seats, and now Lincoln now offers the Continental with 30-way seats.
Wow.
Yeah, it's insane.
Now, the article points to that the number one priority is for safety. So if you're adjusting your seat, make sure that it adjusts so that the seatbelt is on correctly and that you're not too close to the airbags, you're not too close to the wheel, correct?
Yeah, the article points out that Volvo is very careful about moving the seat point harness with the seat, which is pretty nice. But anyone who's been in a car with power seats knows that in many cars, especially many affordable cars, the seatbelt anchor stays where it's at in the B pillar of the car while the seat moves.
Right.
So, yeah, that if it doesn't feel right, it's probably not right. You don't want that scrubbing against you in some strange way. It should feel snug and secure and not abrasive in any way.
And Volvo is leading the pack in terms of that kind of safety?
Yeah, they're always careful about certain things like that, and I think that's really cool where the seat belt stays with the seat as it moves, which is, just very forward-thinking.
Yeah, and you don't even really, that doesn't really enter into your mind, you know what I mean, as that being important, but it is important, and I've never really thought about it, but the seat belt moving with the seat makes absolute sense.
Yeah, I'm a taller guy, and you see the thing where sometimes you can move the anchor point in the wall just a little bit up or down in the B pillar. And that's handy, but it's not the same thing.
Right. Okay. Tom, hang on, all right?
Will do.
All right. Tom Appel is with us. We got some texts coming in. If you want to call or text, you can follow Tom on Twitter @car_guy_Tom, and he can answer any and all of your automotive questions. We also have more car-related stories to talk about as well during his monthly visit. 312-981-7200 is the number. News is next. Wow. Welcome back. Hi, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And yes, it is February 21st, despite the fact that Vic just said it's going to be 73 degrees today. My God.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So
mid-60s today, though.
Mid-60s today, Thursday. Yeah. I'm sorry, Wednesday. Wait, hold on. Today's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
Thursday, it'll be 73 degrees.
Yeah, that's what Tom Skilling says.
Well, then it's going to happen.
Right.
Wow, that's insane.
And we're supposed to, so we've been breaking high temperature records since Friday.
Yeah.
Consecutively. We're supposed to flirt with another record today and tomorrow break one. So
absolutely crazy.
It's pretty good.
And by the way, from what I've seen the extended forecast, I think we're getting snow on Saturday.
Yeah.
So it's like going to be 73 on Thursday and then we're getting snow on Saturday.
Right.
Chicago, everybody. No wonder everybody's sick. Jeez. All right. Hey, hi, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We're back. Tom Appel is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and you can follow him on Twitter @car_guy_Tom. You can also call or text right now, 312-981-7200, for any and all automotive questions. And Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
Hey, I always like to ask you, what are you driving and what have you driven lately?
Oh, good question. I just drove a really interesting vehicle. I am driving the Hyundai Elantra Sport. Now, this is the Hyundai Elantra, which is Hyundai's compact car, into which they jam a 201 horsepower turbocharged engine, and it's a delight. I think their target audience is someone who likes the Volkswagen GTI, and I think they got pretty close to that. But good-looking car, nice interior, all sorts of fun to drive, even with the automatic transmission, and a fairly accessible price of about $26,000.
Wow. Okay. So, that's currently what you're driving.
That's what I'm driving right now, yeah.
Okay, cool. We got a bunch of texts coming in, Tom. Let's answer a few questions and then get to some more articles, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. Sherry says that I would love to hear Tom's thoughts on the 2017 Chrysler Pacifica. And by the way, there's a related story about the Chrysler Pacifica opening doors to wheelchair users.
Yep, there is.
Yeah. Yep. So tell us what your thoughts on that car.
Yeah, the Pacifica, we made a Consumer Guide Best Buy, and it is, frankly and plainly, the best minivan ever built.
Wow.
It is incredibly refined. It is luxury car refined, all sorts of space inside. The single problem with that is it's a little bit expensive at the base price end compared to other minivans, but it is well worth it. Very refined. If you've got a family and you're looking to move them around in both comfort and luxury, that's the way to go.
And at the auto show, they unveiled the new upfitted Brawnability in the Pacifica for the wheelchair users.
Yeah, this is kind of handy for people who are trying to upfit a vehicle for wheelchair activity because now it's officially a Chrysler model. And what this means is a dealer can order it for you, and then you can finance the whole thing at one place.
Oh, wow.
And do all the work at one place. So, yeah, really cool. And you know that it's a factory fitment that the factory approves, that the engineers work together. It looks good. It looks like it works very well. I haven't test-driven one with the Brawnability conversion. But the fact that the companies work together is promising.
That's great. Okay, and that was also debuted, unveiled at the auto show this year.
Yeah, that was a Chicago auto show debut, yep.
All right. Mark in Elgin says, I'm interested in a 2017 compact SUV. I'm looking at the 2017 Honda CR-V and the Hyundai Tucson and a price range of $27,000 to $30,000.
Yeah, well, the price range is spot on. Those are good vehicles. People who buy the CR-V swear by the CR-V. It's just wonderful. Another vehicle to look at is the Toyota RAV4 and the Mazda CX-5. Now, CX-5 is being updated later in 2017, so there's going to be an all-new model coming, but the existing one is fabulous.
Okay, great. And then Russ says, could you please ask Tom how the lease programs work when trading in a car you still owe on? I have a 2015 Ford Escape and I'm still financed with. It's not a lease.
It's not a lease.
No.
But he's asking about breaking a lease?
I guess.
Okay, yeah. When you break a lease, usually there's a penalty. And you should know that penalty because it's in your lease documents. They tell you up front what it is. It's typically $1,000 to break a lease. So it's a pretty serious deterrent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Don't do it.
No, not if you don't have to.
Oh, all right. All right. Here's an interesting story. Tom, and I'd love to get your reasoning and opinion on this. The legendary Cadillac, the brand of Cadillac, is now more popular in China than it is in the U.S.
Yes.
What's that all about?
General Motors has had luck now with two brands in China, more luck in China than they have in the U.S. The first one is Buick. Buick sold about 250,000 cars in the U.S. Last year, but over 1 million in China, and General Motors has taken Cadillac to China as well, and it didn't do well initially, but last month it caught fire, so it's looking like that's going to start working over there too. Now, it's worth noting that both Buick and Cadillacs in China are built in China, so there's a lot of commitment to that market.
Oh, I see.
But it's a huge growing market, and there's a lot of love for Buick, and probably a lot of people over there know that Buick and Cadillac are closely related, so the Buick love is spilling over to the more expensive Cadillac brand. But yeah, they're doing well over there. General Motors does incredibly well in China, and actually better there than they're doing here.
Are the designs there and the way that the cars are structured and built the same as they are in the U.S., or is it different?
They are close, and what you're seeing happen is that Buick design, the exterior styling, for the U.S. is actually dictated by what they want in China, because that's now the bigger market.
Mm.
And so you're seeing that. Now, the Cadillac, what they call their art and science design language, which is that really intense creasing at the corners and at the sides of the fenders, that look is seems to be playing well in China, but that's an American-centric design.
Okay. That's interesting. Cadillac doing well in China.
Yep.
Yeah. Why is Cadillac not doing as well here?
Cadillac had an engineering and design renaissance a few years ago, and it seems to be playing well, and the cars are generally well-reviewed, but shoppers don't seem to accept them as direct competition for BMW, Audi, and Mercedes, or Lexus, for that matter. And Cadillac has been fairly optimistic in its pricing, in terms of pricing as closely as they can to that competition, and they're probably just not quite there yet.
Oh, okay.
So there's been some buyer resistance.
Okay. All right. Look at another text here. Robert says, my neighbor is selling a 2010 Nissan GT-R that has very low mileage. I would only buy it if I can make money on it later. Is it a vehicle that you think will increase in value at all?
It could. Here's the thing about the 2010s. For people who don't know, the GT-R is very close to a supercar. Priced it. In 2010, it was about $80,000. Now they go for about $110, $120. But it's Nissan's Corvette competitor, essentially. Fun car to drive, not very pleasant to drive in traffic. It's a weekend car. Whether or not they appreciate is a good question. The early versions were a lot less powerful than the versions they're selling now. So I think demand for 2010 models might be fairly low relative to newer ones. So you'd have to hold on to that for a long time.
Okay. Interesting story about GM and Honda teaming up to create hydrogen-fueled cars. Let's give a little information about hydrogen cars.
Yeah, a hydrogen car or a fuel cell car is essentially an electric car, except that the electricity comes not from a battery but from a fuel cell, and the fuel cell is powered by hydrogen. And you need pure hydrogen to do it. It's not grabbed from the atmosphere. You actually need a tank full of hydrogen. The thing about the fuel cell, which works just fine, is that it's very big, it's very bulky, it's very expensive, and all sorts of research still needs to be done on fuel cells. But they're very expensive. And the only place that they're viable right now in test fleets is California, where there is infrastructure of hydrogen fuel stations. And they're all in Southern California, predictably around L.A. and whatnot. But for manufacturers to be dipping into this very expensive technology by themselves has proved cost prohibitive. So Honda and General Motors, which have done independent work in fuel cells, are now going to team up to build them in Detroit.
So the fuel. So it's, what are we looking at in the time frame on this? This is still a ways away, correct?
Well, there are running examples that you can lease right now if you live in California, but you're kind of, it's kind of a special group of people who can make it work in their daily lifestyles. I don't know if we're ever going to see it, because I think that fuel cells could be wiped out by a leapfrog or two in battery technology.
Okay.
I'm not sure that this is the way to go, but a lot of people believe it is, and I think that most manufacturers are doing due diligence by experimenting with it. I don't think it's actually the way we're going.
Now, every time you go, for these huge hydrogen fuel stations that people can go to in and around L.A., how does that work? Do you have to replace an entire tank, or does the tank get refilled? How does it work?
Yeah, it's under pressure, and it's in the form of gas. It works pretty much like pumping gas. I don't know if you can do it yourself. That's a great question, and I've never done it myself.
Yeah.
You have to actually latch on this kind of big hose and twist some stuff. It's a little bit more complicated than pumping gas, but not a whole lot more. But you have to top off the entire tank at a fill.
Okay. Interesting stuff. But that's big, GM and Honda teaming up.
It is, and it's going to save both of them a lot of money.
Okay. All right. Another text coming in, Tom. Mike in Park Ridge says, my lease is up in April. When is the best time to shop for a new vehicle between now and then? Any advantage to getting a new car early before my lease is up?
Yeah, as soon as possible if you can, because the buying season sort of begins towards the end of April. You know, it gets better in May, and then June, July, and August are crazy. That's where there's a lot of demand and probably less deals to be had. Right now is the slow season.
Okay.
Yeah, if you could do something sooner, you're probably better off.
Okay, and the lease is up in April, so that's like right before the right before it all begins, right?
Right before, yep.
Okay. 815 area code says, I just bought a 2016 Honda CR-V. According to the dealership, I don't need to change oil every 3 months or 3,000 miles. Instead, there is a sensor dependent upon the miles and how you drive. How accurate is that, or is it better to have it done the traditional way?
Those monitors are crazy accurate, because what they measure is not mileage, but actual engine activity. So it's actually counting the revolutions of the engine, essentially, over
time. Wow.
Yeah, so it's a great way to do that. You see that on some Chevy big trucks, for example. And what's scary, if you're an owner, is that it's way past 3,000 miles. It's more like 7, 8, even 10,000 miles. But because that's what the factory suggests and that's how the warranty works, you're completely covered by using that.
Oh, okay. All right, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is with us. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He contributes to their Daily Drive blog, and we'll talk a little bit about a couple of pieces he wrote for the blog. And you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. We'll take a quick break, and if you've got text questions or calling in questions about cars or automotive stuff, 312-981-7200. And again, keep that number for your Two for Tuesday requests as well. And that'll be coming up later. All right, well, I'll take a break. It's Nick DiGilio on WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio. Seventh floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 o'clock. And coming up just after the news, at 3 o'clock after the news, Donald Brackett is going to join us. He is a journalist and the author of a new book called Back to Black, Amy Winehouse's only masterpiece. Really terrific book about the making of that great album, and about Amy Winehouse as well. And we've got a couple of copies of that book to give away, and we will do that a little bit later in the show. If you're an Amy Winehouse fan, you should really get this book. And if you are lucky enough, you could get a couple. We got two copies to give away for two lucky listeners. That's a little bit later on. We are also going to talk about presidential recipes. And Esmeralda is back, and we're going to play a little celebrity name game later on. Two for Tuesday is going to happen, and you just get your requests in at 312-981-7200 for your Two for Tuesday requests. You can also get your questions in for Tom Appel, who's here for a few more minutes. Any and all automotive-related questions, 312-981-7200. And let's welcome Tom back to the show. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay. We got more texts. Got a ton of stuff coming in. Let's get to a couple more texts. And I want to talk about a few more things, including, I love when you write in the CG Daily Drive, about certain years and certain cars, when you go back and look at those things. That must be fun to do, first of all, right?
Yeah, I enjoy doing that. And our archive of old Consumer Guide books is endless entertainment.
Yeah, I bet that's great. But I have you picked 1973 for a couple of articles.
Yep.
I got to say, when we get to it in just a few minutes, the gas guzzler thing is astonishing. I mean, it's really unbelievable.
Yeah, it's brutal.
All right, that'll be coming up in a little bit. So let's see. 708 area code says, what is Tom's opinion of the Subaru CVT? I'm driving an 01 Forester and may eventually need to replace it.
CVT, continuously variable transmission, is the new modern replacement for most automatic transmissions. And the problem with it for some people is that instead of stepped gear changes, as you'd feel a car shift as you go through, as you accelerate,
yeah.
CVTs don't do that. They have kind of a rubber bandy effect. And some people find that very unsettling. The Subaru CVT is probably slightly better than average. My wife and I just bought, full disclosure, a Subaru XV Crosstrek with a CVT. Mm. And it's just fine. I drove it over the weekend. You get used to it very quickly. I think that on a test drive, you might be annoyed by it briefly, but I would drive it around town and see if you can get used to it because it's very effective.
Okay. That seems a little, I can see that being off-putting though, Tom.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you're our age, I think,
yeah,
and you're used to regular automatic transmissions, you'll find it very strange.
Yeah, sounds weird. 847 area code says, I want to buy or lease a 2017 Honda CR-V EX with all-wheel drive in the next 2 or 3 months. Does Honda run promotions in the early spring?
Honda always has lease specials going. Honda resale value is so good that they're always leasing their vehicles. And resale value is all about what keeps leases cheap. If you go to Honda's retail website, you'll see what their lease specials are. But there's always Honda lease specials.
Okay. Then look them up now.
Yeah.
All right. We got some calls coming in. Here's Joe on WGN. Hi, Joe.
How are you doing, kiddo?
Go ahead.
Super. Question regarding oil longevity. I'm retired. And I'm lucky if I put maybe 100, maybe 200 max on my car in a month. So I've been in the school that you change it every 3,000 miles or 3 months, whatever comes first. So I've done it on a 5-6 month schedule. So the question is, should I still do that scenario based on the longevity or workability of oil in a standard car?
Yeah, 3 months seems like too often. It might be a little wasteful and a little expensive. But, sure. Yeah, even if you don't hit the mileage, you should probably get rid of it at least once a year. Check your owner's manual and see if they have something for time, because they probably do. But you want to make sure. But at least once a year you want to get rid of it. But check your owner's manual just in case they say to do it more often.
Gotcha. So given the current quality of standard oil, regular stuff, not super variety, a year is about a good maximum, if you will.
I think so, yeah, because oil just doesn't like to stand still, and moisture accumulates in it, which helps it break down.
Okay.
Moisture does. Sorry.
Moisture does,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Thanks
okay,
so much.
Joe, thanks. Take care.
Bye.
All right. There's Joe, and we've got another couple of texts here. Jim in Carbondale says, Tom, what are the benefits of putting nitrogen in your tires instead of air?
There are no benefits whatsoever. I've done a lot of research into this.
Uh-huh.
The atmosphere is 91% nitrogen anyway, so trying to put pure nitrogen into tires is folly. The claimed benefits are that nitrogen molecules are larger than oxygen molecules, so that nitrogen escapes from the tire more slowly. Additionally, nitrogen might expand and contract less in temperature, and all this stuff is probably true, but the difference is so small that it just doesn't matter in application.
Okay, there you go, Jim. 847 area code says, if vehicle has Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, is there any reason to buy optional car navigation systems?
Probably not. If you're comfortable using Google Maps or some other system, they work really well through those. I just use Google Maps through Apple CarPlay, and I cannot remember the vehicle, but it worked great.
Okay. All right. And Kathy's got a question. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Hi, Tom. Nick, I love you.
Thank you.
I live in Chicago. Have for 50 years. We're now moving down south to rural Indiana. My husband waits until after the auto show is over to tell me that he wants me to look for a four-wheel drive vehicle. I currently drive a smart car. I think there are enough trucks down there. I don't need another truck. There's always a truck available to me. So what do I look for in a four-wheel drive car?
A four-wheel drive car, if you're looking for a sedan, perhaps, a Subaru Legacy is a great way to go. I'm kind of a big Subaru fan, and that's a great all-wheel drive system. For the occasional snow you'll see in southern Illinois, that would be great.
Yeah, they don't get as much down there because it's usually about 5 to 10 degrees warmer.
Yeah.
We're moving.
Can I ask you a question, Kathy?
Sure.
50 years in the city, why are you moving?
He retired. His family lives down there. He wants to be with family.
Okay. All right. That's that. Fair
Nick,
enough.
I was Nick, just, yeah. Nick, marry me, please, so I can stay.
I'm not going down that road again, Kathy. So. Well, I hope we helped you out, Kath.
Thank you.
Best of luck.
Bye-bye.
Take care. There you go. I love it when listeners call up and say they love me, Tom.
Yeah, you got to love that.
All right, speaking of love, 12 worst gas guzzlers of 1973. Can you put us – I love the fact that you framed this with Fellini references, Tom.
Yeah. Because the number that came up most often, the horrifying number that came up most often was 8.5.
8.5? Well, Forks and Speed is a fantastic Fellini movie. But 8.5 miles per gallon. How – what?
Yeah, things were brutal. 1973, by my estimates, was the worst year ever for fuel economy. So, but 8.5 miles per gallon, yeah.
Isn't
that's
it?
Tough. And the worst was 7.
7. I'm looking at this. The Lincoln Continental. 7 mpgs. How? What do you? What?
Yeah, it's brutal. That thing weighed 5,300 pounds.
Oh, man.
And the thing that happened this year is that manufacturers were adapting to what was called low lead gas.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they had to detune the compression ratios of the engine, making them much less efficient.
That's so ridiculous, man.
Oh, it's terrible.
Oh, man. The Lincoln Continental Mark IV, 7.5, a little better.
Yeah.
The Cadillac Sedan DeVille, 7.5. And these things were just beasts.
Yeah, they were gigantic vehicles, and they were all over 5,000 pounds.
The Cadillac Eldorado, 8. The Ford LTD, 8.5. The Pontiac Grand Prix, 8.5. I don't know why that surprises me.
It kind of surprises me, too, because it's a little bit lighter than the other vehicles.
Yeah, yeah. The Ford Thunder. And you see, I would expect terrible gas mileage from those beasts that we were just talking about. But, the Grand Prix doesn't appear to be as big and crazy as those other cars were.
No, it really wasn't either.
The Ford Thunderbird, 8.5. The Oldsmobile Toronado, one of my favorite names.
It's a good name.
For a car ever. Also 8.5. And then you've got some 9s here with the LeBaron, the Imperial LeBaron, the Caprice, the Chevy Caprice, the Chevy Monte Carlo, and the Buick Riviera. Just insane.
Yeah, and that would be right in time for the OPEC oil embargo.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. All right, the 10 slowest cars of 1973.
Yeah.
Were you surprised by any of these?
Surprised? No. No, I would not have been surprised by that.
Yeah. So you got your Volkswagen Beetle. This is 0 to 60, right?
Yeah.
22.6 seconds.
Now, I have driven these vehicles, and they felt every bit that slow.
Does it feel like when you're going to hit 60 in a Beetle after 22.5 seconds, does it feel like the car is going to explode?
It doesn't. It's just, you just feel so happy that you're up to highway speed.
Without getting rear-ended trying to merge.
It's just so stressful.
Oh, God, that sounds terrifying. And you wrote a bunch of other pieces that people can read. That's consumerguide.com, and you can check out cgdailydrive.com and follow Tom at car_guy_Tom. Tom, always a pleasure, man. It's always great to have you on. We'll talk to you next month.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay, Tom, man, take care. There you go. Tom Appel, everybody. He rules. Follow him at car_guy_Tom on Twitter. News, 9 seconds.